Mookie Wilson joins us on Sports Byline. 12 years in the major league split between the New York Mets and the Toronto Blue Jays. And, of course, he held the Mets record for career stolen bases and career triples until Jose Reyes broke both of those marks. And I guess most of the people remember, of course, the 1986 World Series with Mookie and Bill Buckner, because during that game number 6 of the 86 World Series, Wilson avoided being hit by a wild pitch. That allowed the tying run to score in the bottom of the 10th inning, and then his ground ball later in that same at-bat went through the legs of Red Sox first baseman Bill Buckner, allowing the winning run to score. You know something, Mookie? When I think about that game, it's one of those type of games that everybody who saw it knows where they were when they saw that game. What is it that makes it a game like that?
I think it's the event that occurred, the most unlikely event that occurred. I think also that there's a lot of history that both clubs brought into that game. Both teams had their own demons to fight and conquer. And I think that probably brought more attention than anything else. And I think that made it more memorable than anything else. I think that the play itself was kind of fascinating, but I think the whole game, once you go back and look at it, was just a fabulous game.
Mookie, also, I think another aspect of it was the fact that futility came into play. We're talking about two franchises that had known an awful lot of futility over the years. Am I right?
Well, yes, that's what I meant when I say each club had its own, you know, demons to conquer. Boston, you know, they've been fighting the Ruth curse forever, you know, and the Mets have had our share of ups and downs, mostly downs, up until I think like 85. So we were trying to climb the ladder and get to a point of respectability. That's what Boston was trying to shake, the mighty curse that had been placed upon them from years ago.
Take me through the 86 season for the New York Mets. What was the catalyst to their success that season?
Well, I think the 86 season was just a continuation of what had started to grow in late 84 and in 85. I think that it showed that the team was beginning to turn the corner. We were winning, but we weren't winning at the pace to challenge anyone for a championship. We had some teams that we had to really fight against, and that was St. Louis Cardinals mainly. And I think in 86, when we went to spring training, after the 85 season, we barely lost. I think that we felt that we had put together enough players with the experience, you know, to challenge and to really overcome any, you know, slumps and stuff that usually occur during the course of the season. So I think it was a continuation of 85, which I think we were well-rounded. We had young, strong pitching that had matured, which was rare in that time. You know, most teams probably had more veteran pitchers, but our pitching staff was very young. Our core players were very young players who had played together, you know, in the minor leagues, and they had played for the manager, actually, who was David Johnson. So I think it was a situation where we were very familiar with each other, and we had developed what they call chemistry. But that chemistry had started being developed in the minor leagues, and I think that was just the main component for our success in 86.
Also, you had that pitching staff, if I'm not mistaken, it was one that, as you said, had matured nicely, and they also had a guy behind the plate by the name of Gary Carter that I thought was perfect as the right catcher at the right time. Am I correct in that observation?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. We had another catcher who the Mets were very, very high on at the time. You might be familiar with it, with John Gibbons. And unfortunately, Gibby had hurt his elbow, and Mets were left with, okay, we need a catcher to handle these young arms. And I think, I don't know how Carter became available, but, you know, thank God that he did. At that time, we gave up a lot for him, but it was worth the price. He was a veteran catcher, you know, experienced, and he had credibility. And I think that's the most important thing when you have a young staff, is you have that credibility and they trust him. And their games, they relied on him to, you know, call their games and allow them to just go out and do what they did best, was just throw the ball.
In New York City, how prevalent is the feeling that the Mets are kind of a stepchild? They get handed down things because of the dominance of the Yankees for so many years. Is that a feeling that players in an organization feel? Was it felt that way at that time?
Well, there's no question about it. I think when you play in New York, you don't play in the shadows of the Yankees. I mean, they have so many banners hanging up, they don't have a place else to put anymore. You know, they have more numbers retired than we had players, you know. And it was just, it's no secret, you know, when you play in New York, you have to contend with, the Yankees. And it's a PR battle as well as competition for the fans. I mean, that's just the way it is. Anyone that comes here, accept it and work, you know, and try to work with that. But we were, you know, lack of a better term, stepchilds of New York, you know, in the early 80s. And that was something that the Mets organization was really trying to change.
You know, there are certain players during the course of their career, in particular games, something happens and they're connected forever. And, of course, that's the way it is with you and Bill Buckner. You were saying to me you're pretty close friends. Tell me a little bit about how that friendship evolved after what happened in that 86 game.
Well, first, Bill and I were cordial friends, friends before 86. I played in AAA, we were called Tower Ties at the time. And I played with his brother, who is Jim Buckner. And I got to know Bill through his brother Jim. And so when I got called up in 80, I just introduced myself and told him that I'd played with his brother, which is Jimmy, and that's how we cordially met each other then. And for then, you know, for years, we played against each other, you know, and we were, you know, cordial friends, you know. It just had a professional relationship. And then after the 86 season, well, during that, you know, we in the playoffs, we just, you know, we knew each other, but we didn't have any kind of tight bond or anything of that nature. But once the play was done, believe it or not, we hadn't spoken to each other for a couple of years after that. I think the next time I spoke with Bill was I was traded to Toronto, and he was in Kansas City. And that was the first time, which was like, I think that was in 89, and that was the 90, it might have been 90. And that was the first time we had actually spoken to each other since the 86 series. And from then, he came up to me and kind of broke the ice, and we started talking, and we just started developing a relationship, and we started doing some, you know, small appearances together, and the relationship just evolved from that.
As you know, the fans, particularly in Boston, can be ruthless, especially over an incident like that. But I know that there is a bond and there is an understanding between professional athletes in which they can talk to each other about certain circumstances. Over the years in talking to him, did he ever open up to you a little bit about what he went through? Because when I've talked to him, he was very candid with me about how difficult it was for him after that.
Well, I think that's one of the first things that we spoke about. I was a little hesitant about bringing the subject up because I did not know him that well. Did I know how he was going to react, you know, just talking about the series. But he was very, you know, forthright when, you know, actually he brought the conversation up, you know, and he brought the conversation up and we started talking. And then we started talking about situations in the game, you know, why did this happen and why something did happen. And we talked about the play in particular many, many, many times. We talked about how it affected his family, how it affected his career, how it affected my career, you know, and my life, and how it kind of tied us together, affected both of us. And we talked many times about the benefits and, you know, how it actually kind of was not too flattering, you know, especially for him, because we're talking about a borderline Hall of Famer. You know, we talk about a guy who has 2,700 hits, and to be defined, you know, by one play. And we talked about this in great detail, you know, how unfair it was that both of our careers were defined by that one moment. And yes, we've been very open with it, and he's been very open. Some things we've talked about that we probably will never share with anyone else, but that's between us.
Time certainly gives everybody a perspective, and I'm wondering whether Bill can kind of laugh a little bit about it, even though it was such a big moment. Can he laugh? Has he put it into a proper perspective, you think?
I think he has. And I think, you know, the project that he and I just completed, that was part of it. I think the project we just completed kind of will give the impression that everyone who sees it that, you know, this is okay. He's okay with this thing now. It's not the end of the world, and he has accepted it for what it is. I mean, it's a moment in baseball history that could have happened to anyone. He was just on that end of it. And usually there's always someone who is considered, you know, the hero, and there's always someone who is considered the GOAT, whether it's justified or not. And he's accepted that, and he's moving on.
You're talking about the picture by Rob McDougall that you guys have gotten together on that hangs in the Mets Hall of Fame. Tell me a little bit about it. What does it depict, and how does it depict the moment?
Well, you know, it's a great painting. I approached Bill about it because he and I have been talking for years about doing something together. And we did not know quite how to do it that would give both justice. We did not want another photo. I don't know if you've seen that photo that's been circulating around. There's about 20 million of those things floating around. And it just does not define, you know, who we are, you know, as people. And I think that this painting is a action shot in the background with the championship flags in the back, has Bill on the right, and I'm on the left-hand side of it, and has given a portrait of both of us, you know, as human beings, as people. Of course, it gives you the reality of the play, which Bill is somewhat sad, and I'm really smiling in the play, but it also shows an action shot. And I think that this kind of defines what the play is, but it also defines us as people, is that, you know, yes, we played and enjoyed it and we competed, but we are also close enough that we were able to get together and do this to show both sides, you know, of the play. And the only thing it doesn't say is how it affects our lives. And I think that if you look at the painting hard enough and long enough, if you get it, you know, you'll really start to smile. You know, it's really nicely done.
There's another part of the legend of the play as well, and maybe you can clear this up for me a little bit, about the ball.
Yes.
You know, tell everybody what happened and what the legend has been about the ball, and where the heck is it, Mookie?
Okay, there's been many, many stories about that ball, and there's only one ball, by the way. There's only one. And when the play was completed, the game was over, of course. I'm running second base. Don't ask me why I'm running second base. I have no idea. But I'm running second base. Ball goes down the right field line. An umpire by John Kibler was the right field umpire at the time. He picked up the ball when the play was over. He was a good friend of our traveling secretary, who was Arthur Richmond, who passed some years ago. He gave the ball to Arthur Richmond. Arthur Richmond brought the ball to me in the clubhouse. I'm sitting at my locker. He gives me the ball. I sign the ball, and I give the ball to Arthur when I inscribed it. I give the ball to Arthur Richmond. Now, some years ago, Arthur Richmond, he was working with this charity, and he called me and asked me, did I mind if he put the ball up at auction to raise money for the charity that he was involved with. I told him, it's your ball. You can do what you like with it. Go ahead, you know, with my blessing. And he did, and the ball signed, it sold for about, you know, $50,000, $40,000 or something of that nature. And then later on, an actor bought it from a collector for Charlie Sheen, as a matter of fact, bought the ball for like $93,000. You know, it was in his house for a few years. Mike Piazza went to a party at Charlie Sheen's house, and he saw it, and Mike Piazza came to me and said, I saw the ball in Charlie Sheen's desk, on his desk. And I said, that's great. Now, I'm not even thinking about it at that time. And then the ball went from there, and I think now a collector bought the ball, and he gave the ball to the Mets on loan to put in a museum here at City Field. So the ball is here in New York at City Field on display.
Boy, it's had a long trip. Mookie, we've got about 30 seconds left, but what do you think your baseball legacy is?
You know, that's what's unclear because of the play, and most people, whenever they, you know, recognize me or speak to me, the only thing they want to talk about is the play. So I hate to say it, but I think that is probably going to be my legacy, is just that play in 86. And I think people really, maybe it's unimportant, maybe it's uneventful career, but I don't think that people really know how many years and the effort that I put into perfecting my profession. But don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining. It's just nice to be remembered.
I want to thank you, Mookie. I've looked forward to talking to you. Take care and come back anytime here on Sports Byline.
All right, thank you.
12 years in Major League Baseball with the Mets and the Blue Jays. Mookie Wilson with us as we continue on Sports Byline.